episode 17 of Drunk on Comics, starting meow.
Hello, and welcome once again to Drunk on Comics. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, nerdly little nuggets of other fun. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Afternoon.
Afternoon.
Evening.
Evening.
Late at night, and I should be in bed.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, so wherever you guys are at, my name's Derek. With me again this week, we have the brothers Matt and Tony. What's going on, guys?
Same old, same old.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, living the dream.
Tony, anything new in your nerd world that needs to be announced?
No, I think I'm...
Flying the nerd flag every day, just like normal?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got home improvement nerd stuff that I'm doing. Doing adult stuff.
That's not fun. So, yeah. Well, we are going to get things kicked off here with Off the Shelf. If you guys have not listened to us before, we're going to give you a little warning. Off the Shelf, we talk about comic books that came out this week. We have a lot of spoilers. So if you want to read your comics first, you should probably pause it, go read it, and then come back. Otherwise, if you don't care, you like them, you're in the right spot.
Yeah, we got about as many spoilers on this show as Marvel has spoiling their own titles. So,
yeah, with their news releases, yes. The bastards. Yeah, so this week, Off the Shelf is brought to you once again by Detroit Fanfare. It is happening October 26th, 27th, and 28th at the Hyatt Regency in Dearborn, Michigan. We are going to be there doing a live recording of our weekly comic book review podcast, as well as having a table where we'll probably be shouting out and mocking people as they walk by. You're more than welcome to do that back with us. Detroit Fanfare can be found at DetroitFanfare.com. Find them on Facebook. Find them on Twitter as well. So, there you go. Matthew, I see you got a little AVX tie-in sitting in front of you.
Yeah, I've got Avengers number 30. Story by Bendis. Art by Simonson, Hannah, and colors by Keith. The this is kind of a tie-in, and even though the whole AVX thing hasn't quite wrapped up yet, obviously, when it's all done, a new threat will happen to the Avengers, as it does. But it's kind of nice because, as a tie-in issue goes, it's starting to lay the groundwork for something that might come later on. Also drawing on a lot of the continuity that has recently happened. Even bringing up the facts that the heroes, when they're off doing a world-saving, fighting the Phoenix Force type battle, all the other villains at home have an opportunity to try to make a play for power.
You know, I liked that point. You had this, what was it, Mr. Negative?
Mr. Negative, yeah.
You know, in there going, ha-ha, you know, trying to take advantage because he's kind of a low-level villain.
Well, he's going off after all that Nazi tech that came down from Fear itself, which I like that they explain, why is it in a secret warehouse in New York City and not some other place?
Yeah.
And they actually explain it, saying, well, because you can't shut down New York City long enough, so what they had to do was quickly build these secret warehouses to just store it all for the time being. And then a new crisis happened, so they didn't get around to cleaning up their mess.
Store all the crap that the guys, you know, left behind.
So that made it interesting, but I like at the spoiler, at the very end, it was all set up by Madame Hydra, so that when the heroes went to stop Mr. Negative, she could go get Skrull technology.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, oh, that's a better step. That's a better prize to go after. So I like that it had an escalating rewards for the villains. Other than that, it's really a Hawkeye and Spider-Woman issue, talking about their relationship problems, which is kind of, all right.
I hate those issues.
I usually do, too.
You know, here's the thing. Like, I don't normally read Avengers, and I picked this one up because it was the AVX tie-in, which, as a tie-in, I thought was...
Doesn't really go into AVX.
There's one double-page splash at the beginning showing, hey, most of the guys are over here.
Yeah.
That's their tie-in. That's the whole fucking thing. But, you know, the thing that surprised me, I've been reading the Hawkeye solo series that just came out, where, you know, he's got a thing for this other girl in there. I had no idea he's in a relationship with Spider-Woman. So,
and he had a relationship with Scarlet Witch in the past, which is what's pissing off Jessica Drew here, which then bugs me because I thought that Scarlet Witch was supposed to be with Vision. And ultimately, I was just going, so many soap opera romances going on.
Yeah.
Can't they just beat people up?
Yeah, they're divorced now, Scarlet Witch and Vision, which, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Man and woman and robot.
So, it's a nice, this one, Avengers number 30 here, it's a nice tie-in to move the story along and looked for Hydra to be with some Skrull technology here in the near future. And probably going to be a nice big villain here for the next year or so until we have another crossover blockbuster that changes everything up again.
Yeah.
One more thing I wanted to point out, though. There's a great scene after Hawkeye and Jessica Drew already take everybody out that Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor show up. And they're like, oh, well, the job's already done. And in the background, you can see one of the thugs trying to get up and Thor walking over to him. And then, as Captain America's talking to Hawkeye and Spider-Woman, Thor, the guy goes, ah! And Thor is just saying, be still! As he punches the guy against the wall. And I thought that was some nice little humor there in the background.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that, and I liked the art on this, too.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I thought it was good, solid art, so.
So I give it a read, because it, you know, it's tying into what's ever coming next.
You know, and for somebody who doesn't read Avengers, it was a nice issue to kind of jump in on. Mm-hmm. It certainly wasn't... While there is some stuff going on, you didn't need to know, because I certainly didn't.
Well, one of the things that I really enjoy about Bendis's books is that he's usually putting the threads of something back a couple years and then getting to them later, as opposed to starting something and then having a flashback issue that says, oh, this was how this whole event came about. He's like, no, I already know the direction that it's going to go in, an overarching, you know, theme to it. I know that Hydra's going to, you know, get some more technology, and that's where we're going. And so he's laying those seeds right now. So.
Yeah. Cool. Tony, what are you going to tell us about this week?
So, well, I didn't have much to pick up this week. It was really a light week.
It was a weak week.
Yes.
even I was struggling to find
and
books.
Something I found out recently, though, is some good, just easy pickup books to just look at have been the new 52s, the Zero issues, because they've been... Well, they start in point, so it's a big... If you haven't ever read them, you kind of get into it and find out what they are. So, picked up a couple of them, but the one I really want to talk about was Red Hood and the Outlaws, number 0. The reason why this one stuck out more is because, even though I don't know a lot of DC, I kind of understood the Red Hood being a pain in Batman's ass, but he also was previously Robin.
Oh,
yeah, he was the second incarnation of Robin. There's been like four.
So which
Jason one? Todd.
Jason okay. Todd. There was a really good animated movie that they did explaining that whole story.
Yeah, Under the Red Hood, and that was really that's where I first understood who he was. Yeah. But this story was written by Scott Lobdell, art by Pasquale Ferry, Ig Guerra, and Brett Booth. This book.
Did Brett Booth do the cover, or did he do interior art?
Looked like he did interior art, too.
Wow.
There's a couple different, there's kind of two different stories in here, and it breaks it up in a couple different chapters.
Okay.
In the first chapter, it just starts off of him saying, you know, this is how I was born, and this is the day that I died. So, still in the past, there is the part where he is killed. And it looks like it is Joker killing him, which you get later on in the story. With the whole reboot, you know, you don't know what in the past has changed.
But this gives you some grounding that this did happen. Right?
But yeah, I'm not sure how the whole first story arc went, but I do know the original reception to the second Robin of Batman wasn't well received. Mm-hmm. So they had the giant contest if the Joker should kill him or not. Well, people called in, and he lost.
Yeah.
And DC was like, oh, shit, we've got to kill this character.
Yeah.
But now here's a weird thing, though. Because technically that didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't happen. But if you think about how resurrections and stuff go, he's been dead for the most. I think it was a good 20 years, 15 to 20 years before he came back.
Well, what I mean by it didn't happen is if you look in the back, because I picked up a couple of these number zeros, and they all have like I picked up Catwoman, I picked up Batman. It's like, first appearance is, you know, Catwoman number 1, 2011. You know, they are completely disregarding with the new 52, anything that happened previous to that.
For the most part, now, but they're still kind of following the story. So, in this, it shows kind of Jason, how he grew up, how he, you know, went about just becoming the new Robin. And that second half of the book, you know, kind of shows his mom looking like she OD'd, and then it talks about the Joker actually telling how he's the one that set this whole thing up to make Jason Todd Robin. Not necessarily the Red Hood, but he set it up to where deadbeat father, mom's on drugs, that he would eventually, this kid would eventually go out on the streets and meet Batman. Somehow it was the grand scheme of Joker, at least in this new 52.
Right.
But then it was all so that Joker could kill him.
Practical joke, Batman.
Yeah, to follow Batman.
Gotcha. Oh, my bad.
But what he never saw was the Red Hood emerging, and it really didn't tell any of the story of who these outlaws are or what the book's going to be about, but it was a good job conveying like who the Red Hood was, and it was interesting to see a little bit more depth of the character's past. Like I said, I kind of knew he was a Robin, but I didn't know that Joker had that all the other things set up so that he would become Robin, so that he could kill him off later. Like I said, overall, I think it was a good book, and it was, out of the New 52s, one of the most interesting, because as Joker even said, you know, he became a pain in the ass, not only for him, because he's kind of vigilante, so he's not necessarily evil, but obviously he wants to kill Joker, because Joker kind of killed him.
My understanding is he's like Batman, but with like a more twisted, you know, I don't mind killing the...
And using guns?
Yeah.
Well, Batman doesn't use guns unless it's on his Batmobile or Batplane.
Yeah, unless it's on a vehicle or something. Yeah, because guns are cool.
Yeah, then it doesn't matter if he shoots people.
Yeah, so pretty much, like I said, it will be interesting to see what he does with his team of outlaws, who they come up against, and if there is a showdown with the Joker in the new DC world.
All right. So, are you going to pick up more?
No, this series, yeah. It's interesting enough to figure out, you know, where he's going to go with this character.
Cool. Well, I want to tell you guys a little bit about one of my favorites, which you guys know, Daredevil. Daredevil number 18 this week, written by Mark Waid. Let's see, art was by Chris Samnee, and colors were by Javier Rodriguez. Just a quick little background, Daredevil, a.k.a. Matt Murdock, and his law partner, Foggy Nelson, have split up the firm because Foggy thinks that Matt is losing his shit. Found a box in Matt's desk that had his father's skull and boxing gloves that had come out of his grave from a couple issues prior. And so he basically blew up at him, said, "I can't have this. You know, you're hiding things, blah, blah, blah."
Does Foggy ever know that Daredevil is...
He knows. Okay. Yeah, he knows he's Daredevil.
Okay.
Now, this book has two different story arcs going on. One is a young man comes into Nelson and Murdock to get help for a case, because what they've been doing is helping people who can't get attorneys to represent them because they're all tied in with the mob. They teach them how to defend themselves, basically.
Okay.
And so that's part of the case. This guy's coming in trying to help his sister. The second is that Matt's ex-wife, Mila, shows up in his apartment. Now, both these arcs are really just starting in this issue, so there's really, it's a lot of setup, but it's done really, really well. And up until about 2 years ago, I hadn't read Daredevil regularly since probably the mid to late 90s. So the fact that Matt had been married was news to me. But apparently she's crazy, has been put in a mental institution, so he has no idea how she got there. She doesn't seem to know, she doesn't seem to know that she was in a mental institution, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of that, you know, kind of detective stuff going on as to what's going on. The nice thing is Waid gives you enough detail that while I want to know more of the backstory, I wasn't really lost in what was going on. So, now the main reason I wanted to bring this book up wasn't as much the story, although Mark Waid has been just killing it on this series, and this is still a good individual issue. The biggest reason I wanted to talk about it was the artwork. Chris Samnee's art is just incredible. I mean, it's this crazy mix of current style with old style. It's kind of like if I had to compare it to a movie, it'd be like making Casablanca today utilizing the best things of both worlds.
Is this the only cover they use this picture with?
Yes.
Okay, because I've known you've had that.
Well, yeah, that cover was, I think Paulo Rivera. Will you check that for me? I'm almost...
No.
Oh, Javier Rodriguez. No, that's color art, Tony.
Oh, I can't read.
Here, let me look.
Cover, color, it's just a letter.
Yeah, I'll actually have to look, because it doesn't, for whatever reason, list the cover in here.
It's actually two letters.
But I'm almost positive. Yeah, it is. It's Paulo Rivera. His name's on the
front. I just find that just amazing.
But, yeah. So, anyway. God, I lost my train of thought.
So you like the art because it's the best of both worlds.
Thank you. Now, One of the things, though, that I like about the art is, you know, I love Daredevil from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And, you know, this had all the good things about it with none of the things I didn't. The angles and the panel layouts are fantastic. And the coloring in this book by Rodriguez is spectacular. He's got a lot of heavy use of blues and reds during the Matt/Daredevil scenes. And browns when Foggy is shown. And it's just, it's beautiful. So, to me, this is exactly what a comic book should be. Solid storytelling. They're utilizing aspects of the character's past. It's visually stunning. I mean, it's a great book. There's really not a whole lot more than I can say, other than if you're not reading this series, you really should be. So, that's it.
All right. Yeah, I'm not a big Daredevil fan, but I do love listening to his stories through you. helps me get to know the character a little bit better.
Yeah.
Well, the other book that I picked up, which is the one book that I actually went out to look for, is Walking Dead 102.
And before we get into this, I'm going to reiterate, there's going to be spoilers here.
And Matt's going to be pissed because he hasn't read all these.
And for some reason, I don't know why, but there seems to be like this little quarantine about discussing spoilers in Walking Dead in the comic book world. It seems like this book's supposed to be untouchable, and I don't get that.
Yeah, well, yeah, because people are going to read it should have picked it up by now. Or if they're just starting, it's going to be quite a while till they get to this point. Yeah. They'll probably have forgotten it anyways. But, I mean, you know, Rick's dead. His kid's dead now. I mean, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I mean, and
Rick's dead?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Totally kidding on that one. Anyways, this is kind of finishing up a long story arc that they had following this other group of people, these other survivors.
This is the Something to Fear story arc.
Yes, and I have to say I really enjoyed this story arc when it started because it made something else be going on besides just zombies out there and killing them. Because they pretty much become efficient zombie killers.
Yes.
But they're not necessarily efficient human killers because they're a whole different aspect of killing your own kind.
Well, you know what I mean? They went off, they kind of lived on their own. You know, they were in the prison, then they had to get out of there. And, you know, then they moved on and this Jesus guy finds them, takes them back to this new neighborhood.
Yep.
You know, and they start living there and they're doing well. And then you get this, they were in the neighborhood, then he shows them the hilltop or whatever it is. And then they run into this bad guy, Negan.
Yeah, who Negan, what I love most about his character is he's just not a bad guy. He is personified as a being worshipped.
Yeah, and pure evil.
Yes, the dude doesn't give a crap. And I believe we talked about it, God, it felt like forever ago, but we did talk about Glenn getting his face bashed in with a bat when that happened.
That was issue 100.
Yeah, and that was a huge what the fuck moment.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you, even though you know Kirkman has said that, you know, everyone is vulnerable and that no one is safe as far as who he'll kill, you never really thought that they'd kill Glenn.
Yeah, especially when they picked the random person to go with them, that it would have been that random person who ended up dying.
Yeah.
So, the one thing I didn't like about this at first, I mean, it starts off with Rick comes back there and he's all mopey about Glenn getting killed and tells everyone that it's good, you know, that it's just good to just give in and let the bad guys get half their stuff. And not only am I...
And you can kind of understand his argument, though, in the fact that they aren't equipped to fight hundreds of men. You know,
but like I'm pissed though because that's not the Rick. But also, I have to say, if I was living in this world, I'd have to totally agree. Like, you can't keep fighting every front when there's zombies all around. You're gonna need help, and although you may not like it, it makes the most sense. Well, after he talks to all the people to get them knowing what's up and get them on the same page, Rick kind of redeems himself. Last panel, bar none has to say, is just when he tells Jesus, "Pack your shit and follow that guy. Don't let anyone know what we're up to." This is right here what makes the story so interesting. It's always that last page that gets you compelled to want to know the next issue.
It is such a hook.
And it's like, I want to know what's Rick really, you know, Rick really didn't cave in. Awesome. High five. Well, I guess he can't really high five with both hands, but...
well, he can't Eiffel Tower, that's for sure.
Wah, wah. I love the subterfuge and intrigue, or if I can talk. But coming up in the series, and I can't wait to see. Yes. I like to see that there's a little more than just zombie bashing.
Yeah, and the one thing is that I really like about this is that Rick is once again doing what's best for the group as well, even though the group hates him right now. I mean, like, the second to the last page, you know, they show every one of the main characters just staring him down and giving him the fuck you look, which he's like, he knows what he's doing is right, but he can't let on to them what he's doing because something goes wrong. He doesn't want them.
That would be implicated.
Yeah. And the other thing I like is that they're giving Jesus a little bit bigger role. You know,
Jesus deserves a bigger role in all stories, I think.
Well, when you saw him, you know, when he managed to get himself untied in the van.
Oh, yeah.
The whole time.
And then he was could have been untied, but he just kicked ass with his arms tied behind his back.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see, you know,
what his background is, what his story is.
Well, and just what he can do. And I mean,
and him and Michonne should have kids and see what that kid can do.
Yeah, they're going to create Deadpool or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, that was awesome. This is one of those books where I've said it before, I did not get on board until somewhere in the 90s, the early 90s on this book, because
Means that in issues, not years.
Yeah.
So say, what world are you living in that came out in the 90s?
You know, I think it was probably around like when issue 91-ish came out, when I'm like, you know what, I finally need to get on board. You know, I'd heard enough about it. And I hate buying trade paperbacks because even though I understand that when I buy comic books, I'm buying what I love, not what I think I can make money on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's my number one collecting rule. Buy what you love. Don't buy for money. Because buying for money in comics is like buying lottery tickets for your retirement. You know, there's a chance, but highly unlikely. You know, so I started buying the trade paperbacks. And trade paperbacks I hate because there's absolutely zero collectible value to it. Except in maybe a case like this where a first printing of the trade paperback has a little bit of value.
See, I like it, though, because then I can just read a whole bunch of story, not get all the little cliffhangers, hooks that are going to make me upset until next month when it comes out, and there's a lot less advertisement.
Well, now, the nice thing, there's no advertisement in the middle of these.
Okay.
You know, and which is something we should talk about at some point. That's one of the reasons I do love indie books, is that you don't...
You get them at the front, you get them at the back, but you don't get them in the middle of your story.
Right, like with the Marvel and the DC, man. I mean, like, there were a couple issues in the last few weeks where it's like, there's one page of art, there's an ad. You flip the page, one page of art, there's an ad. And I'm like, really? And it's with and it's primarily DC, I think, with those stupid Converse.
Yeah, let's save that for another topic.
Yeah.
Another day. Back to The Walking Dead.
Yeah, so, but, no, I picked up the trades. Tony, you read the trades. I mean, you read them, like, well, I ended up buying them, so it took me a little bit longer to read them. You know, you borrowed them because I'm like, here, read this. And I went through them. It took me about a month to buy all 16 and read them. It took you 2 weeks to read them after I gave them.
Yeah, cool. It was many nights of, I got home from work and, let's start reading a whole nother book. And
yeah,
that turns into getting another book and it's like, you got to force yourself to go to bed. So you,
yeah. It is terrible, like terribly addictive. So, I mean, I know everybody's heard about this, and if you're not reading it, it's worth reading.
Yeah, it's very, very just intellectually stimulating on some of the things they have to go through, human nature.
Well, it's not just a zombie book. I mean, if it was just a zombie book, that would have got played out in probably like the first 10 issues.
Yeah.
Okay, killing zombies. It's a more survival and that's why, you know, the whole zombie apocalypse is a perfect philosophical discussion you can have over beers and still, you know, really delve into it.
Which is one of the reasons why I've always really liked Fanboys versus Zombies, because, again, there's an example, you know, but it's the lighter side of that. So
the lighter side of the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Because there's the silver lining there.
Always look at the bright side of life. Yeah, so... All right, well, cool. I think that's going to wrap us up on there. But actually, Tony, that kind of leads me right into news and notes on one thing. We talked last week about the Killers, you know, little teaser with where it was talking about, oh, who was it? It was talking about Sam Humphries and Rob Garney. And one of the things that I really liked about that was we were guessing whether or not this was going to be the Uncanny X-Force title. They have announced for sure that it's now Sam Humphries and did I say Rob? Ron Garney doing that. This is really cool. The thing I like about it is that Humphries is going to make sure that all the things that happened in the Rick Remender run are still parts of the past, but he's starting with a brand new team. Psylocke is going to be the one remaining character.
Oh, really?
She's going to be the leader of the team. And he's going to have Storm, which, for me, it's going to be interesting. I'll hop back. But he's also going to have Puck.
Okay.
Short little midget guy from Alpha Flight.
I know who Puck is.
And Spiral. From the Mojo, the Mojoverse. The six-arm, you know, witch ninja.
But, I mean, I thought the whole point of that is that they're X-Force is like, we'll use lethal force to take down people.
And
I don't see Storm using lethal force.
Which I think that's one of the things that could make this a very interesting book.
Is her crying in the background, don't use lethal force?
I'm hoping that she's not crying all the time, because...
she did kill some people. It would be kind of badass, but...
Yeah.
Well, usually when you strike someone with lightning, they die. But it's a Marvel, it's comic book world.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but maybe it's not like really bad lightning. Maybe it's like that lightning that you...
Static.
Yeah.
Static lightning.
That just doesn't, I know you're going to buy it because it's still got Psylocke in it, but
well,
I just
and I'm buying it though because of Sam Humphries. I love this guy's writing.
I just know that I think they have the perfect incarnation of the team right now with who they got as far as Killer, Secret, Covert, Ops.
You got a version of Nightcrawler who's from a different universe, so he doesn't mind... putting a sword through someone.
Deadpool obviously doesn't care.
Yep.
You know, but now what he said in an interview that I saw was that they are going to add some other characters along the way.
Okay.
So I'm just really interested, but I like his stance that he's not here to try and continue the story as Rick Remender would. He is here to tell his own story, utilizing
the properties that Marvel has,
the history and continuity that's already been created. He's got his own things that he wants to tell, his own questions he wants to ask and answer. So I'm looking forward to that. So that was...
Well, speaking of shaking up, there is a development of Captain America becoming president.
Yeah, I saw that. And that's in the Ultimates.
Yeah, okay, yeah, to let our readers know that we haven't just all of a sudden stumbled upon something in the main universe. But you got to think, though, the Ultimate Universe has become a flagship for kind of... one of the core other universes.
Well, and it's become one of the main points for the movie universe.
Yeah,
the Ultimate whole thing took off because it was a retelling of the same stories, but let's modernize them. There was a lot of, you know, let's admit it, most of the comic book origin stories that came out the 60s or before kind of had some kooky twists to it, right? Because then... they always thought that they were writing for children and not necessarily adults. Well, comic book writers realize that most of their audiences are probably young adults. And so what the Ultimate Universe did was say, let's modernize the stories. Let's give them in a cohesive world where all the pieces are fitting together, which is, again, something that they did in the movies. Then they went and did Ultimatum, and in my opinion, messed up their world beyond a point... to a point where it's no longer, it wasn't as much fun for me afterwards. I was really loving the Ultimate Universe until Ultimatum, and then they wanted to shake things up and make it different than their normal Marvel Universe, and that's when I quit, that's when I jumped ship.
Well, one thing though, because I know you've read Ultimate, how did Captain America become Captain America in this universe?
So Captain America was he fought the Nazis, he got frozen... He was back then. But what's interesting is that the superhero soldier program, it spawned Nick Fury, who is technically like their first incarnation of Captain America, was actually Nick Fury. And they were doing test subjects on the superhero soldier on African Americans and Asians, and most of them were dying. Nick Fury was the first one where it took. And
Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury?
Yeah, Nick Fury, Samuel Jackson. And then...
That still pisses me off that he went from, you know, that you just randomly change his race in the middle of a comic book. Like, I understand a reboot of a character, but I mean, it's like...
Well, in the Ultimate Universe, he was always...
Right, back. But in 616, he wasn't.
No.
And now he is.
Well, that's but that's his son. That's his son.
Get with the times, there. Yeah. We'll fill you in on who 616 Nick Fury is.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So anyways, the origin story was that, and also in their quest to make the superhero soldier, the superhuman, they created the X gene. And Wolverine was the first test subject to get the X gene and survive. And
so they created mutants.
And that was like the big, they did a Ultimate Origins. That was like the big secret, was that if humanity ever found out that they're to blame for mutants, what would happen?
Interesting.
So I kind of like, you know, they made some bold choices there. But ultimately, Captain America has a very similar story. But what's awesome about him is he's a soldier first. He had no problems taking a gun out and start shooting some people in the first few episodes. He's also that brilliant strategy guy. He likes his strategery, and he's just always been. He's actually the reason I like Captain America now, was because when I read him in the Ultimates, I'm like, he's pretty badass.
Well, and he's even on your T-shirt today, nerd.
Yes, he is.
So yeah, I think though him being elected president's a cool move. I mean, it'll be.
Yeah, my understanding of the story is that the government made a whole bunch of Sentinels to take out the mutants, and then those Sentinels went berserk and were kind of attacking everyone, and so all the superheroes had to come together to fight the Nimrod Sentinels, and so when it's all over, they're probably like, man, our legislators are stupid, why don't we put the superheroes in charge? We'll see how long that lasts for, until he gets impeached or something.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of the Ultimates and how they affect the movie, this is a real brief little note that I ran across, that there's some promo art for the Iron Man 3 movie that shows the Iron Patriot flying behind Iron Man.
Okay.
So whether or not they're actually going to use him as a character in the movie could be, you know, we don't know. Is it supposed to be Norman Osborn who's going to be donning the suit like he did in the comics? Or is it going to be Captain America coming in for a quick cameo to tie in with something Avengers? Or is it just going to be a suit in the background? And they're just, Marvel likes to fuck with people by showing it in a piece of promo art.
So they'll spoil it in a couple of weeks and let us know exactly
what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm sure. So.
Well, Captain America plus Iron Man would be kind of badass, because then he could have some more robotic shieldness flying out of him. And
I think they did that in a What If or some alternate universe.
Well, just thinking of them being combined, I was thinking of back on our Facebook page, we've had quite a few funny pictures, and one of them that was just badass, that I think you put up, Matt, was the Green Lantern ring being given to Batman.
That was awesome.
And how interesting that would be to combine those two powers in... Pretty much, I think that wins hands down. Having the determination, intelligence.
Tony, can we finish news and notes, or are you just going to interrupt?
No. And
are you just butting in?
Yeah. Tony butts in.
And I just wanted to throw this out there. If you guys could combine two powers, you know, bad guys, good guys, and for whatever reason, what would it be and why?
Well, just to appease you on your butting in powers that you have, because I don't know what else you'd combine that with. Actually, Matt, you were the one that put that picture up?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was sweet. It got me thinking on there. And I started thinking about characters that I like. And I'm like, well, who could I mix with Daredevil? Because obviously I'm a Daredevil fan. And the one that just got me chuckling inside was, what if you mixed his powers with Mystique? Because would he actually be able to be a shapeshifter, not knowing what people actually look like? Or would he just look like everybody was made out of Play-Doh?
He'd be a Skrull.
Yeah. give him Hawkeye's vision.
Yeah. he thought he looked right, but he looked like he was made out of Play-Doh, and everybody's like, what the fuck is wrong with that guy? So, that was like the one that, because I'm
Daredevil and Mystique.
I was thinking, well, there's a couple of things that I was just thinking, I was trying to think of my favorite good guys, bad guys, whatever. I kept thinking Apocalypse with someone, Survival of the Fittest plus some other power. would be good, but I couldn't really think of. I was thinking Sebastian Shaw and Cyclops or something. He could just shoot himself and just keep on getting power.
I thought Sebastian Shaw, though, was like kinetic energy.
Why did you say that when he said shoot himself? Why did you look at your penis?
I was shooting myself. I was doing the mimicking of, like, I shot myself in my penis. But the one I was really came up with, Deadpool and Mimic. It'd be awesome because he could never truly die. He's got Deadpool's healing factor. But then he could have powers that change infinitely. So that's
That's like cheating, though. That's like wishing for more wishes. I can take anybody's power.
Isn't that just a Mimic, though?
Yeah.
But Mimic still has died multiple times.
Well, so you should just mimic Wolverine's healing.
Well, and in Exiles, he did.
Yeah.
You know, but what is it? He's got like one-fifth of the power.
Yeah, because he can take up to five powers.
Yeah. So, You know, but that's kind of just Mimic, so that's kind of cheating, Tony.
Okay, fine. Screw you, man.
I love Doom, but Doom always loses. I always feel like Doom has some unlucky breaks. So what if you put Doom and Longshot together? Or Domino? I don't think he would lose anymore.
I would go Longshot over Domino.
Because it's more... Because
they're both male.
But then Doom would have to have that weird, like, only four fingers thing.
But you know, and that bad mullet.
Well, and also,
oh god, what if he had the mullet outside of the outside of the mask?
He doesn't wear it anymore because he's got
He's got the good mullet.
That'd be awesome. Oh, by the way, Longshot was an awesome villain in the Ultimate X-Men universe. Longshot was really cool as a bad guy. Anyways,
I got an idea though, because. Mixing guys and girls, though, this could actually make one of the best supervillains, I think, out there. Take Kingpin,
okay,
who really doesn't have any powers other than the fact that he's incredibly intelligent.
He's fat.
He is fat.
No, he's not fat. That's muscle.
I know it's muscle, but he's
incredibly strong, but not superhuman strong.
Yeah.
So if you gave him some actual powers, like Psylocke, all of a sudden you're adding ninja ability, ninja fighting skills. To him.
To a giant.
But, and who wouldn't want to see a fat guy in a ninja outfit? I mean, that'd be funny.
Look at me hide behind this SUV.
Sneaking up on you, all of a sudden you turn around, it's a fat... Well, you'd hear him coming because he's a heavy breather, you know. But add psychic knives to his fighting skills, and if you added the telepathy, where he can actually make people do what he wants them to do as well as read their minds... He would be one of the most terrifying and powerful supervillains out there.
I remember in one of the Uncanny X-Men, when during Fear Itself, when the unstoppable Juggernaut was coming towards that... There was a great issue with Cyclops like teaming up all the X-Men, and when they put Banshee and Dazzler together, I'm like, brilliant.
Yeah,
I think... Rockslide and Gambit together.
Yeah, that was 541 and 542, I remember, because I loved those, and actually I have a couple of the original pages from those.
What if you had Multiple Man, so you get to make a bunch of copies of yourself, but the problem is the copies are all next to you.
So Jamie Mad... Madrox?
Madrox. With Nightcrawler, so that once you make a copy, he can just teleport wherever you want.
Oh, God. Well, basically, so what you're saying is you want Bamfs.
Yes. Well, that would make the Bamfs, wouldn't it? I didn't even think of that.
You just want Bamfs.
I do want some Bamfs.
The one that I was really thinking of, I just thought of Deadpool and Mimic just because, it was kind of cheating. But one that I'm really thinking of that could really be effective, Superman and Sinister. Create the ultimate bad guy. I mean, right now, Sinister's a geneticist, and he looks for the perfect superhero DNA. He's got it inside him. All he needs to do is draw up his own DNA, make as many clones as he wants. He's got his super army right there. Plus, he's a geneticist. Because he's a geneticist. I'm pretty sure he's smart enough to come up with a way to not be vulnerable to kryptonite.
But how's he going to draw his own blood to get his DNA?
Yeah, because he's Superman.
He's a geneticist. He can use other forms of genetic material.
I have my doubts on this one. I like your thinking, but I like to find flaws in your in your logic.
Though. What if you gave like Hydro Man and Namor so that he could like actually stay out of the ocean for a long time and just keep the ocean with him?
Or why don't you just give Namor a camel back so that he can water himself down when he needs to? I mean, hello. He's not wearing any clothes. He could carry a fucking water bottle with. And let Rob Liefeld draw him, and then he can have all these pouches of like little baby bottles of water. So,
all right, getting back to news and notes.
All right, news and notes. I got a just one that I thought was pretty interesting. What the hell, Tony?
I don't know.
That was magical.
That's bonus music for you guys at home. One of the things with Marvel now, they're doing a big shakeup, obviously, with titles, you know, switching this, switching that. One of the things that I recently saw is that they're ending three very long-running series. The one that I wasn't so super surprised about was Wolverine. It's going to end, I think, at issue 317. You know, this is the third or fourth, you know, run of Wolverine titles, so not that big of a deal, and Wolverine's got 50 other titles, so fuck it, who cares? Captain America and Black Widow, which will be 640, it's the Captain America and you know, because they've had Namor, they've had this and that.
Captain America team-up.
Yeah, that's ending at 640, so I'm kind of curious, you know, and that one bothers me because, you know, when you're at issue 640, I think it's cool that you show pride in the fact that you've built something up that long and that you have something going that long. I can understand it might be a little bit, you know, daunting for a new reader that wants to jump into that title. Well, God, it's 640. Where am I going to start? And I know number one issues sell. Fuck you, comic book publishers, for renumbering everything. But Superman number 700, Amazing Spider-Man number 700 is going to end that.
Yeah,
that one bothers me as much, or possibly even more than when they ended Uncanny X-Men. Yeah. You know. I don't know. I mean, it's nothing against the idea of wanting to have a start fresh thing, but you know, put something on the cover that says, you know, part one of four.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. I mean, there are comic books that I go out where I've never read, don't know anything about them, and if I see that it's the start of a story arc, I'll pick it up.
Yeah. If I know it's something that's a limited series, I can probably justify my budget to pick up an extra title because I know I'll pick up this title for an extra 4 months, right? Yeah. If I'm hooked, I'll keep buying. But if not, then I can.
Or better yet, you go out and see, you know, Punisher number whatever on the stands, and it says, you know, the Spider-Man Complex, you know, is the title, and it's like part one.
Yeah,
you're more likely to, you know, do that.
Yeah,
quit fucking with
this. I like the long-standing history of like the numbers and knowing that like that's been for how many, you know, 12 issues a year.
Well,
by how many years?
Spider-Man just had his 50th birthday here this past month.
So they've been making, you know, 50.
Peter Parker's 50 years. 50?
Yeah. Yeah, he looks great, doesn't he? Yeah. So
must be those spider genes.
Yeah. So that was that. Tony, I know you had one other thing you wanted to talk about.
So they've kind of confirmed Thanos as being kind of the bad guy of the next Avengers movie, if it couldn't be told at the end of the first Avengers that he's definitely set up to be the next bad guy. But they've also confirmed that he is going to be in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie that is also in the planning stages. And not only that, but they've also been talked of he's going to be the central figure,
the primary antagonist
in all these other ones. Whereas Agent Coulson was kind of the beginning in Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury, in the first sets of,
also kind of the Tesseract.
That kind of came out later in Thor, though. I'm thinking, all the movies, though, had combined Agent Coulson kind of going at the end of the movies, kind of tie them together and bring that group together. This is obviously going to tie into all the movies. And another thought that has been talked about before is Thor having the Infinity Gauntlet in Odin's vault, and him saying he needs to go fight a bigger, badder bad guy, if this could be, you know, Thanos within that movie as well. I mean,
I'll tell you the one thing that I'm really waiting for them to reveal is that Aunt Robin from How I Met Your Mother is going to be the new, you know, Coulson in all of them, and so she'll be in everything because I liked her in that outfit.
Well, Maria Hill is a pretty big person in the Avengers story arc, so she'll be sticking around.
Yeah.
Well, I like that Joss Whedon has been like assigned the overlord, if you will, of the creativity projects and stuff, so that making sure that this whole idea that we're making a world that fits together with all of our movies, just little tie-ins here and there, but all existing in the same world. Joss is going to make sure that fits together. They talked about the first set of movies taking several years to come out. They took their time with them. It was a good choice. It paid off for them. But that was phase one. Now they're moving on to phase two, and they said it's going to be, like 3 years to complete phase two. Phase now. And then I imagine they'll do phase three and then see where it goes from there.
Yeah.
So the fact that Thanos has been dubbed the central figure for phase two, fine with me.
Phase three is going to be phase then.
Phase then.
Yeah. So
phase future.
I have one other brief thing, and this is a conversation that I would really like to have at a later time, but I know we don't have enough time to really get into it. Greg Rucka announced that he's leaving Marvel as well as I'm not sure if he's still doing stuff with DC, but I know
it sounded like he was pretty pissed with DC too.
Yeah, it's one of these things where he talks about the lack of appreciation from the big two, and that's a whole separate conversation. But I guess one of the things I want to ask you guys, we've kind of already mentioned that Tony will always follow Deadpool, but when your favorite artist / writer, creator, whichever it may be, leaves the title, do you go and buy what he moves on to? Or do you just go, I hope he comes back to something else I'm writing, a character or title?
Depends on the source material he goes on to. If it's something I just totally don't like, no. If it's something that I've been thinking about and then they jump on, that's a perfect reason to start because it will get me into possible. So if it's a title that I really have no care, even if they go on to it, I'm still not going to care.
Yeah, and I guess I'll agree with you on that because there are some things that, I'm not going to pick them up because I just don't them.
This is a difficult question because I think lots of people have strong opinions. Like if you're a person who says, I got to follow the writers and the artists, then you have usually pretty strong opinions about that, and you might dismiss people when they say, actually, I read it for the characters and I like the properties. And like me, I'm an Avengers fan. I'm going to keep collecting Avengers until I start reading it and I go, this person is like, I'm not enjoying it anymore. Then I'll put it down. But to me, the writer in that sense doesn't really matter because I like the characters. Now, on the other hand, someone like Bendis, if I hear he's doing another project, I will probably pay attention to it. When Kirkman's doing something, it's like, okay, I know these names. And if they start doing their own work, I'd be willing to pick it up. When Frank Miller does something, right, and he's got his name attached to it, you can bet that I'll be thinking about, should I pick this up or not? And I think it's like you guys said, if you like the characters and you like the writer, then you're probably going to do it. If you like just the writer, you're probably going to think about jumping on.
And I'm kind of the same way. There have been some people, I've been having a conversation on Twitter with people about this, and one of the guys, one of the things that he said was that a good artist can save a so-so story and a good writer can save so-so art. Mm-hmm. So, sometimes they're...
It's a team. I really wish that there would be much more appreciation from the big two. I think that they should get compensated, better for... I don't know what their contracts are and everything, but I can imagine there's a lot of money being kicked around at Marvel, especially now that they're owned by Disney. That
Disney doesn't have any money; they're broke.
Yeah, I don't understand why they can't, why there isn't more respect for what their laborers, if you will, are doing.
Yeah,
but that's a whole proletariat,
yeah,
bourgeoisie argument.
Well, and I guess we'll wrap this up. But this is actually a really good segue into the Indie Turnpike for me, because I picked up Ghost Number Zero from Dark Horse this week, and it's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, and the art was by Phil Noto. Now, I bought this for a couple reasons. One, this is a character that I've seen and heard about for years, but I really know nothing about at all. Never bought a book, never looked into what the character is, what her powers are, who she is. And like we talked about before, this was a really thin week on comics. So I went looking for something new. One of our listeners and followers on Twitter suggested this one to me, and when I saw the creative team, I'm like, this is done. Because I really love Kelly Sue DeConnick and what she's doing on Captain Marvel. And Phil Noto, he's all over the place, and I think his art's fantastic. So it was good. Now, the basis of this story is that there are a couple of ghost hunters you know, like you see on reality TV shows, going out looking for spirits, and they have some new piece of technology that can kind of pull spirits into our world. They end up manifesting this woman known at this point only to me as Ghost. I don't know what her real name is or if she has it. And that's kind of part of the story. And so they bring her into the real world. There is nothing told about this woman in the book or her character. You don't know if she's really a ghost or if she's some kind of human with a superpower. And she doesn't actually speak in this until the very, very end when all she says is, "I'm hungry." And she says it like twice or three times. So they do show her being able to have both a fully physical form where she can kick ass and throw people away, as well as an intangible form where she kind of phases like Kitty Pryde, reaches her hand into this bad guy's chest, grabs his heart and pulls it out. So, you know, I don't really have a lot to say about this book other than it's merely, it's an intro and really just a teaser into who this character is.
So she's not Casper the Friendly Ghost.
No, not at all. Not by any means, but
she's definitely not Patrick Swayze as Ghost.
Yeah, there's no clay molding in this one. You know, like I said, I'm a fan of both the comic and Noto, so, you know, I want to see what else is out there in this title. I was incredibly curious going into this, who this character is and what she's all about, and I have absolutely zero information on it after reading this. So, the writing is good, and it gives you a strong understanding of the other characters in the book. The art is crisp, and I mean, Noto delivers a beautiful story like he normally does. Am I going to read more? Yes. Am I a little frustrated I don't know anything about Ghost still? Absolutely. But it's a good book, and if you're in the same boat as I was prior to buying it, I don't know if this is really a good jumping in point. But what I will say is it did a good enough job for me to want to go and buy the next issue. So the job there was accomplished for me. So that's the Indie Turnpike.
All right. Well, I am about ready to give you guys another little nugget from the web.
The interwebs.
Yes, our interwebs web link this week is drmcninja.com.
I love Dr. McNinja.
Online comic book.
Yes, it's an online comic. They post Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. They have been, God, how many years now? They have quite a few volumes.
I've been reading them since undergrad, and that was a while ago.
So it's pretty much it's an online comic book featuring a doctor who's also a ninja, who is also Irish because he's a Mick. Put them together, you get Dr. McNinja. It's one of those crazy asinine that's what the heck type books that everything that's strange going about it just plays off each other, and it's amazing. It's kind of like when a couple weeks ago talked about Axe Cop, which Axe Cop, I believe, came...
They had a cameo appearance, a little quick team-up with Axe Cop and Dr. McNinja.
But you can go in a little bit more about...
Man, the stories are always... They take fun turns, twists. They reincorporate a lot of the previous issues into them, so there's a lot of continuity and kind of poking fun at itself. For instance, in one of the very first issues, which all came out in black and white, Dr. McNinja is treating someone with Paul Bunyan disease, which turns them into a giant Paul Bunyan, lumberjack. Much later on in the series, dinosaurs have taken over planet Earth in an alternate future that Dr. McNinja is trying to stop. And so to fight the dinosaurs, he gets all his former patients who are still alive in the future. He rounds them up with the Paul Bunyan's disease, and he turns them into Paul Bunyan's.
Or he's got his secretary, Judy, who's an ape.
A sign language gorilla.
Yep.
His Kid sidekick Gordito, who grew a mustache out of sheer willpower.
And the mustache is power.
Yeah, the mustache.
He rides a raptor.
He rides a raptor because...
And all this does not make sense, but at the same point, it works.
It does.
The first issue was him at the McDonald's National Headquarters taking on, what's his name in it? Ronald McDonald or Bonald. Pretty much it's...
It was because of the McRib, it was the McNinja Burger.
Yeah.
He didn't like his last name being attributed to it. Because it gives you farts like a ninja, silent but deadly.
Okay.
And it was one of the other great things, if you read the comic, is they often have like a little hidden message.
Alt text.
An alt text you hold your cursor over the page for a few seconds, it'll come up with the alt text, which is oftentimes very funny and correlating with what they're talking about. So they're on, man, they're on some good stories, and you'll spend a lot of time catching up on their old ones. And then they a few years back they started with color, and it's been beautiful.
So for people like myself who I've been told for years now to go look at this by Tony, is it something you can just jump right into at any time?
Yes, but I would jump in at the start of whatever story they're on.
Each kind of like if you were Marvel, rather than renumbering it,
yeah,
just have a new story arc.
Just a new story arc.
Like, yeah. Looking at this right now, I mean, they have every single thing that they've did up on this site, and it's an easy scroll down. You can get to which issue it is, and then you can scroll to which page. And there's about, looking like 20 different issues, most of them being about...
They get
40,
up to like
20 to 40 to
some of the later ones got up to like 70 pages for the issue.
Wow!
You can also buy them. You can also buy hardcover or trade paperbacks of their old comics.
Nice,
too. But it is out of most internet comics. One of those that there's nothing like it. That's as simple to say. It's unique and it is funny and all around.
The characters are fun, and you really get to know the characters, and they're used well, and it's witty. And just a lot of fun. So
cool. Well, I think I'm about ready for a drink, so I think I'm gonna kick off Booze in the Book. This week, Tony, I was on the number zero thing as well as you, because there just wasn't shit out there to buy for what I normally look at. And so I decided to try Catwoman number zero from DC. Written by Ann Nocenti, who here's actually a great reason. She used to be editor and writer on the Daredevil series back in the 80s when I loved it, so I'm like, I'm going to try this. Art was by Adrian Milo and Julio Ferreira. I don't even know how to pronounce that one. It's just...
We're sorry.
Yeah. So I'm going to pair this comic with a Leinenkugel Sunset Wheat Ale.
Mm.
Reason being is that both of them are a little too sweet and a little too shallow for my taste, but they aren't horrible. While neither of these are things I'm ever going to buy ever again, I can understand why there's an appeal for other people. So, simply put, they aren't my first choice for either a beer or a book, but I can think of a lot worse things to drink and read. So, that's pretty much it. I got a couple shout-outs here, comic book shout-outs that I want to bring up. Irresistible number 3, which came out here this week. I was kind of surprised that it came out as fast as it did. I talked about that in Indie Turnpike. It's from Xenoscope, written by Raven Gregory. Art was by Amat. Go pick it up. You'll like it. There's a cool twist in there where this guy has been cursed, quote-unquote, so that women find him irresistible. Find out that the woman who placed the curse or spell on him is actually Delilah from Samson and Delilah. So it's a very, very interesting book. Go buy it. It's not for children at all. It's very, very mature comic, so be warned. Also, quick shout-out to our friends over at the Illuminati, who we talked about a couple months back, who are writing their first indie book and utilizing some... they're utilizing fanboy feedback. They have their... they've named the comic now. It's called Shepherd, and they have their first 4 pages of the script online, which is pretty cool. They are looking, right now that they're this far, they're officially looking for... their artist, and I've got some details on it, but if you are an artist and you're looking, check them out. They're in our links page. You can go find them and then contact them. Last quick shout outs. Want to give a shout out to our friends across the big pond over in the UK, in particular, Ari Carr and Jay Webb, who are big fans and supporters of the show. Thank you guys. Appreciate all the shout outs and promotion you've helped with us. Also, Intercomics, which apparently is probably the most kick-ass store in England. So they also have online stuff, so check them out. That pretty much does it for all my shout-outs. There was a lot more than normal this week.
Yeah, I don't really have anyone else to shout out to.
Oh, we do have new artists on Artist Alley, so go check them out. Some great ones, including Jerry Gaylord, the artist from Fanboys vs. Zombies, one of my favorites. He has allowed us to put us up there, so... Make sure you guys find us on Facebook. The Facebook page is up and running with tons of funny crap and really no serious content, except for maybe you might get one a week where I say something and, you know, I get frowned upon, but that's okay. I got to do my job.
There's some thought-provoking puns on there at the moment.
Oh, there are some great ones on there. Find us on Twitter as well. So that's going to do it for us, unless you guys got anything else.
No, I say call that a wrap.
All right.
It's a wrap.
Cool. Well, Matthew, Tony?
Adios, muchachos.
All right, guys. Please tell me that that's some horrible fucking app you have on your phone.
Yes, it is.
All right, guys, I'm Derek on behalf of all of us here at Drunk on Comics. Keep reading those comic books, and we will be back next week to talk to you about them again. We'll see ya. You're a fucking nerd.